Welcome to New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. This is a weekly radio show where I interview the latest in what's happening on the planet as far as spiritual awareness and consciousness. And tonight, we're going to have a few guests. Our first guest is Stephen Kopiatek, who is a metaphysical healer and teacher in the New York area. He's going to be talking to us about this very strange phenomenon that's happening in the sky, which is a comet that you're not getting major press about, but Stephen sort of has an understanding of what that's all about. And the second guest is Klaus Heinemann, who's talking about a book he's co-authored with Michal Ledwith called The Orb Project. And Stephen and Michal Ledwith will both be speaking at an Orb Symposium that's happening this Saturday, November 10th in New York City. If you want more information, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And orbs are these little balls of light that seem to be appearing all over in all the digital camera, a lot of digital photographs, and people are trying to understand what they are. Many people think they're altered forms of consciousness or spirit. So first we'll talk to Steve about the comet. Stephen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So there's this strange event in the sky. Actually, I saw a mention of it today in New York Post, but a very small little thing. Tell people what's going on outside the orbit of Mars and how it's affecting us.
Sure. Well, it's a very interesting phenomenon. What originally became a very small comet that's only about 2 or 3 miles in diameter, named Comet 17P/Holmes. It's basically a small comet that orbits the sun between Mars and Jupiter about every 7 years. Now, this comet was discovered, actually, synchronistically enough, the anniversary date of its discovery is actually today, tonight. It was discovered on November 6, 1892. So, happy birthday to Holmes. We would do a shout-out to that.
Are we calling it Holmes now? Is that like a sort of slang name?
Comet Holmes, yes. Now, Comet Holmes is doing something that is really mesmerizing all the astronomers and people worldwide, although it's not being covered up until the past 3 days by the mainstream media. On October 24th, this particular comet had basically increased in its magnitude of brilliance almost a million times. So it became almost a million times brighter in less than 1 day.
But how is something like that possible, like just physically, and under the laws of physics?
Well, exactly. What's happening is that it's definitely violating, from what a lot of the alternative scientists are talking about, it's going against a lot of the traditional dirty snowball theories about what a comet is. The proponents of the electric theory of the universe are a lot more, I think, on target in trying to explain some of the phenomenon. But I'll go into that in a minute once I explain a little bit more about what's happening with it.
Okay.
So what happened was a few days after it increased its magnitude almost a millionfold, it became the actual coma. There was a kind of explosion that occurred in the nucleus of the comet that created a gas cloud. The expansion of this gas cloud surpassed the size of Jupiter.
The actual size of the gas cloud is bigger than the largest planet in our solar system.
And it's even more astounding than that, Alan. Last week, in the middle of last week, it increased its size to over 7 times the size of Jupiter. You're talking about 70% the size of the sun.
How come we're not getting Hubble telescope pictures of this?
Oh, well, actually, exactly. This is one of the questions that I like to pose as well, and that a lot of the physicists, especially in the alternative community, are wondering, too, that there seems to be a massive cover-up by NASA just giving a little bit of a whitewash on their main webpage, just talking about it really briefly. And meanwhile, I'm sure they're having their telescopes pointed at it. But it almost seems like it's of such important significance that it could be fulfilling some of the prophecies of Nostradamus and some of the Hopi prophecies, that this might be one of the reasons why they're trying to keep it out of the collective consciousness.
Yeah, but how come amateur astronomers could take pictures of this with just a high-powered telescope?
Oh, no, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of photographs that you can find online at spaceweather.com is one of the best sites that I've seen. That is a mainstream astronomy website where they've been tracking this comet every day. And thank God that they're able to do that at least and have it out there, because without them, I don't think we'd have as much press. According to the electric theory of the universe proponents, what had happened when they were analyzing the actual orbits of the planets at the time when the comet first erupted, there was an alignment with the comet with the planet Mars and Venus, and slightly along with Mercury. Now, this is from the physicist Jim McKennelly, who has a wonderful website where he goes into this. He's one of the first founders of the Electric Theory Universe.
What's that website?
The website is jmckennellyscience.com. jmckennellyscience.com.
Okay.
This is just in my own research. I mean, I'm more of a metaphysical teacher, but I like to incorporate science and astronomy into my metaphysics because I feel it is all one. And I had dreams about a year ago while working with one of the Lakota Indian chiefs while we were presenting him in New York, and I had these dreams involving the thunder beings or the thunderbirds, which were really a prominent figure in the Lakota philosophy. They were visiting me, and they came in the form of ball lightning in the dream plane, and they were specifically referencing this time of year that we're in now, end of October, November, that it was important for as many people as possible to call on these higher light beings, these thunder beings, to come in because they were going to be necessary to help transmute some of the negative timelines that are taking place, such as what we are seeing with this administration in terms of the desire to create another war in the Middle East and various incidents along that line.
So is that the significance of the comet astrologically?
Well, yes, absolutely. So what happens astrologically with this comet is that this comet was first discovered in the constellation Andromeda. It was subsequently rediscovered in its brilliance a few weeks ago in the constellation Perseus. Now, what's fascinating about this is that Perseus and Andromeda go hand in hand in the Greek mythology. Perseus is one of the greatest Greek heroes who saved Andromeda, who represents the divine feminine, or Mother Earth in that sense, from the dark sea dragon, or from the false serpent. So on one level, it's also symbolic of us clearing our unconscious with this extra energy that's coming in from that eruption of plasma that's occurring around the comet. Is definitely influencing our collective unconscious to be more open to these more refined frequencies. And there literally is an electrical energy that flows between the planetary magnetic fields, according to these other scientists who work with that theory. And they're saying that because of that alignment, this is what is charging up the comet, that it's part of an electrical discharge of the solar system capacitor. And that this is, it, of course, is more than that on the metaphysical level. And it's an amazing energy alignment that's happening that's restructuring a lot of people's nervous systems. And if any of the listeners have undergone any kind of back pain or specifically in the back of the shoulder blade area the past few weeks, I've talked to a lot of people who have had extra sensitivity in this area, and it seems like there's an influence of this energy coming in that the comet is stimulating.
So it's a good thing, in a sense. It's a positive thing.
Absolutely. I totally see it as a blessing of many higher light beings that are coming and helping to use this as a portal to send us increased blessings on the planet.
So why
it's
do
also
you think,
very physical. Yeah.
What's the cover-up about, the NASA cover-up?
Well, I mean, they're only giving it very little. Well, the one thing NASA said was that even NASA says that they have no idea what's going on in this comet. The mainstream astronomers are saying they have no idea how this is possible according to the known laws of old comet physics. What they're quoting in the mainstream media is that it's some kind of comet explosion that might be using a kind of honeycombed structure on the comet where it could be exposing itself to some more ice. Now, this is ridiculous. You can't have a 2-mile diameter comet that expands 7 times the size of Jupiter and say it's just made of ice. I mean, this is what the other physicists are talking about who really are using their...
So the cover-up is to cover their ignorance, or, you're like you said before, possibly to not talk about the Hopi prophecies or the to kind of avoid that?
I mean, yeah, I mean, we were even hearing some rumors. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because of with the Nostradamus prophecies, he talks about this large comet and as a precursor sign to World War III and various other events that would entail, such as a plague. I mean, I don't want to feed that kind of timeline, but the idea is that there are a lot of things lining up. This comet first made its appearance 2 days, basically when Pluto, the planet Pluto, was conjuncting the galactic center. And so there's definitely an alignment happening where it's representing itself as a messenger of these higher galactic energies, as a sign of the times. And, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the institutions, such as the Vatican or other places like that, might see it as a sign of the second coming, perhaps, or something in their mind. You know how these people will oftentimes misperceive these alignments. Uh-huh. It's definitely something that they don't want the collective to feed into, because I feel like it is a tremendous doorway of change and hope to help us rewire our nervous system to help us heal. I had one dream about the comet that was just that it was here to help us open up and bring energy into path 13 of the tree of life on the collective consciousness.
Uh-huh.
This is an energy path that connects the heart chakra to the crown to connect love so that we might understand the presence of unity. And that the energy then floods into the area where Pluto rules. So the fact that it happened during a Pluto alignment is also quite more of a mirror. Just after the sun went into Scorpio, bringing light to the underworld, we have this interplanetary messenger that is becoming larger than anything in our solar system. That in itself is so magical and so mesmerizing to conceive of that it definitely deserves more attention, at the very least, an honoring, you know, of it in our meditations, and definitely for the scientists to become more forthcoming to admit that they don't, you know, to admit some more of what is really happening. For us to be shown more of the accurate measurements is definitely vital, and unfortunately, we're not really being shown that.
Okay, but your prediction now for the future, is it going to move towards us? Is it going to come more into our physical awareness and our consciousness awareness, or is it moving away from us and becoming less out of our awareness?
Sure, here's the other thing. The other thing which also goes against a lot of what the traditional physics talks about is that this comet is actually further away from the sun. It's not coming towards the sun, which would be the classical definition of how solar wind could trigger a comet to flare. It's actually heading away from the sun. It's about basically 150 million miles from the Earth. One very fascinating thing about this is that if you take the distance that the comet is currently from the Earth and you divide that by the distance the Earth is from the sun, roughly, say, 93 million miles, the ratio that comes out is closely approximates that of phi. So you're talking about a phi or a golden mean ratio that basically is happening. So it's even more amazing because it's incorporating sacred geometry with this energy. It's going to be quite interesting because if it, according to other astronomers, there's another site called cometography.com. They were stating that if the comet expands at its current rate, it will be, by December, it will be twice the size of the full moon, which, in terms of our perception, I mean, if you're putting that actual size,
it's going to be that, is it possible this could be some kind of ship, spaceship?
Well, what I feel with it is that it's acting more as like a portal for higher light beings to be able to pump their energy into our inner solar system, and that it's quite possible what I'm waiting to see is the outer shell of the comet, is it going to separate from the actual nucleus? If it separates and then keeps expanding, it's quite possible that we could experience some kind of solar cometary winds. I don't know. This is what we need to keep our eyes on, because also what's happening is that the actual nucleus of the comet is also expanding too. So that's going to shift the actual mass of the comet. So what does that mean?
Just imagine what a shock and phenomena that would be if it appeared in our sky twice the size of the moon.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And like the thing is, currently it's actually about half the size of the full moon, but because it's not as luminescent from that far away, through the visible eye, we can only see it basically looks like a patchy piece of a cloud that's like larger than a star. And it's pretty much visible straight up in the sky right after sunset. But your simple binoculars and telescopes, it's huge. You know, I mean, it takes very, very little equipment to know how to see it. So in that perspective.
So
yeah.
Your prediction is going to be coming more and more into our awareness, and eventually the mainstream is going to have to talk about it. It's not moving out of our awareness.
Well, no, because our planet Earth is moving closer towards the alignment with Mars in December when Mars will be closer to the Earth in terms of the current orbit. So with the electric theory universe, they're talking about that our magnetic fields will line up even more intensely, so it should be even more dramatic. So I'm also saying that we should just really use this opportunity to ask that these higher thunder beings, which are one manifestation of the energy, in terms of being able to ground it, you know, through a cultural archetype, or asking that you bring more awareness to this space through meditation, through contemplation, asking your angels and your guides to help you align with these new frequencies, because to direct that to initiate change so that we don't have to have another terrorist incident or another war. The idea is that they're really trying to generate energy to create these other incidents. So we as light workers need to take our power back and bring this energy in and claim our sovereignty here and say, no, we will not stand for this. We are here to really bring about the new age, the new benediction, not being ungrounded about it, but being very grounded in our conviction.
Well, that's already playing itself out in places like Pakistan right now, where the dictator tried to take over, and then the lawyers and the street people are fighting back. I mean, who knows what will happen there, but it seems like some of that drama is being played out.
Yeah, it's almost like a test case for them to see what would happen over a year if they were to declare that, because part of the timeline of the dreams I had back in last February while the chief was here had to do with the thunder beings coming in, and they were saying that this time of year specifically there was a high risk of a staged, you know, false flag incident happening as justification to go into Iran. So that's something we try to send energy to transmute in our prayers and our blessings, ask that there be divine intervention. So these are all probabilities being played out, And also with the Earth's weather, that same physicist, McConnelly, has talked about, he also wrote a book that was connecting the influence that occur on comets and the plasma fields with the Earth's weather. It's also been a more known fact about how the sunspots can affect the Earth's weather, but it has been less talked about the influence of the dynamic circuitry between the planets, and especially when there's so much electrical energy going on.
Well,
so
the
he was surmising that some of the storms in South America that happened recently were connected to this flaring of the and the whole circuitry of energy that was coming back from the sun as well.
Well, actually, the plasma fields have to do with the next guest I'm going to be talking to, which are these orbs of light that seem to be reflected off of the flash from digital cameras, but they're reflecting off plasma fields that seem to be appearing more and more in the sky. So maybe on Saturday you could talk a little bit about plasma fields and how they sort of fit into new phenomena.
Absolutely, because I definitely think some of the orbs are part of a metaphysical manifestation of the plasma fields that are more tangible. Absolutely, I say they would be connected.
Stephen, thank you. Stephen will be giving that same kind of report and in a little more detail at this Orb conference. Just, you know, we're going to fit you in along with the major speakers there. And so thank you, Stephen. Your website, Emerald Energies, emerald-energies.com, there's videos of Stephen on that website.
And you would do a search for my last name, which is Popiotek, P-O-P-I-O. T-E-K, Stephen Popiotek, P-O-P-I-O-T-E-K.
Thanks, Stephen. We'll have you on again, and actually keep us up to date on this comet, because it's amazing no one else is reporting it, and also that you can really just talk about the physical and metaphysical aspects of it as well.
Thank you. No, I definitely will try it, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Awesome.
We will. I'll be in touch. Thanks for reporting.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, that was Stephen Popiotek, metaphysical teacher here in New York, and it's very interesting that no one is really talking about what's going on up there. You know, Shakespeare said there are more things in heaven than are dreamed of in our philosophies. My next guest is someone who's actually dealing with the effects of these plasma fields, and he's part of a whole phenomenon that's happening called ORBS, O-R-B. Look up that on the internet. And he is the co-author of a new book, along with Michal Ledwith, who was my guest last week, called The ORB Project. And that is published by Beyond Words. And they have a website, beyondwords.com is their website. And you can order the book online there. And there's also going to be a symposium this week in New York, this Saturday. Actually, the website is beyondword.com. And they will have the books at the symposium, which is November 10th at the Synagogue of the Arts, 49 White Street, which is three blocks south of Canal. And that's starting at 3:30. We're going to be having a whole day of orbs and orb discussions, along with a film that just was released, a film by Hope and Randy Mead, who I've also interviewed on this program. If you look at the archives, the New Realities archives, you can get my program with Michal Ledwith and Hope and Randy Mead. Michal will also be appearing on WBAI radio at 10 p.m. New York time this Thursday, and he will be at the conference along with this book that's just being released called The Orb Project. So if we'll go into a whole discussion coming up now with Klaus Heinemann about what orbs are and how everyone could be a part of this phenomenon. So let's see if we can get Klaus on the line. Can we?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, Klaus, thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. That was a little introduction to this book, which is really the first major book, I think, on this phenomena called orbs. I mean, most people haven't even heard of it. Or if they see something that appears on their camera that's unusual, they usually discount it as anything. But what's your take, and I know you go into it in the book, but what's your take on what this phenomena is, and can you just describe it to people who have never heard anything about it?
Yes, it shows up in your digital pictures, and typically it has a circular shape, some light features, I would say, with some interior features in them, circular shape, and they are being seen in digital photos all over the world.
Yeah, but most people think it's water or dust or defect.
Correct. Well, many people, I wouldn't say necessarily most people, but many people dismiss them, not really knowing what they are, as reflections from the light coming from the flash at dust particles or any other aerosols that are around near the camera. Now, of course, I have examined this particular phenomenon quite a bit, and I have come to the conclusion that in most cases, certainly not in all of them, but in many cases, let's say, these are not, cannot be explained as artifactual phenomena from diffraction phenomena.
Because when you photograph a dust particle or water vapor, it doesn't look anything like this.
Well, it does look similar.
Oh, it does?
Yes, it does look similar, but there are substantial differences when you really when you study those in more depth.
What are the differences?
There are similarities.
What are the differences, though?
The differences are that they respond to color enhancement. And most importantly, I would say, the differences are that in some cases you can find these you can find orbs in a fashion that absolutely excludes the explanation that we are just talking about. For example, the explanation only holds when these suspended particles are very close to the camera, within, let's say, a couple of inches.
Uh-huh.
So extremely close. As soon as they are further away, you would not get that effect anymore.
Uh-huh.
And we have quite a bit of evidence of orbs that makes it extremely clear that they are far away from the camera, several feet away.
So
for example, if you are photographing an orb, and if there is an object between the orb and the camera, and if that object, then it's very clear that if the orb is behind the object, then it cannot be just within a few inches away. So I have orb pictures that are eclipsed by objects,
uh-huh,
including by people, so that kind of peek out behind a person and the like. So this is one criteria that determines that these orbs are genuine.
Right. If they're behind somebody, then it's a little. I mean, I haven't seen that many that are blocked by an object. But of course, the next obvious question is, what are they?
What are they? What are they?
Yeah. If they're not any of the things that we can explain, then they are obviously there, or something's there. What do you think they are? And you can also give us a little bit about your background as a scientist
and how
you came. But let's just answer, what do you think they are? And then we'll go into your background, okay?
Okay. Now, it is my working hypothesis, and I only could phrase that as a hypothesis,
uh-huh,
that these are not of the physical world, that these are energetic, but they are not following the normal laws of physics and of the normal laws of energy the way we know it. This is a working hypothesis,
uh-huh,
and I have looked at these in accordance with this hypothesis.
Would you say that they're conscious, aware?
I would say that they are. Now, in my mind, they are not directly what people would call spirit beings or spirit,
uh-huh,
entities.
Uh-huh.
But I would think that they are emanations from such spirit entities.
Now, the other thing is, there's more than one type. There seems to be you know, half a dozen or more colors.
Some are
moving up.
Huge.
Yeah.
I would. My hypothesis includes that there would be huge varieties of these orbs.
The other phenomena that I've noticed is it's a sort of initiation process. Before I was aware that they were there, I don't think I took many, but once I learned about them at the Ramtha School, I sort of opened up to the fact, and now they show up almost in every single picture
I
take.
Yes. When I started seeing them about 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I had never noticed them before, obviously, and then at that point in time, they appeared maybe in one out of 50 pictures that I was taking.
Uh-huh.
And as I then began to study them, they appeared to be much more frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And within a relatively short time, I was at an average of maybe two orbs per picture taken.
Right, as if they're responding to your intention and consciousness, right?
I believe that they do.
Well,
I believe that that is part of the hypothesis. And there is some of my studies indicate that must be that way. For example, in the book I'm describing an experiment where I'm using two cameras and one flash, illuminating the pictures taken in both cameras so
uh-huh.
that they would be absolutely taken at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And out of these experiments, I am concluding that these emanations from spirit beings, or these orbs, choose to beam into the camera of the person photographing.
They choose. So with your experiment, did you use two cameras and one flash? Did both cameras get the flash? I mean, the orb?
And no, not both cameras, but only one camera at any one time would see the orbs. Not both at the same time.
Because I think I got an orb at the same time with someone else. It seems to be the same orb with the same signature pattern in
yes.
two different cameras.
Yes, that can happen too. And I do have, I'm also describing that, where in two successive images, I am photographing an orb that has changed both in location and in orientation and in size, and so rotated a little bit, and very clearly it is the same orb with the same interiority.
Well, that's
so that
what
can happen, and that is another one of those proofs that would clearly indicate that this cannot happen with diffraction phenomena.
Right, and that's what I feel. I photographed the same orb as this. It was pulsating. It looked like it was small. The next picture, it was much larger, as if they sort of
yes.
pulsate in and out of form, shape,
right, right.
size. Yeah.
That is, I think what you've seen is exactly corroborating the hypothesis that I'm working with,
uh-huh.
that they are, in fact, changing their size and their location extremely quickly.
Well,
yes.
No, go ahead. Finish that thought.
Oh, I was just going to say that their normal state of beingness, their normal, what we call ourselves in the physical world, we say that our rest position is one where we are not moving.
Right.
And I believe that these have a rest position where it is just the opposite, where they are moving extremely fast. And
uh-huh.
where they are expanding and contracting extremely fast.
Uh-huh.
And that is the reason why we don't normally see them with our bare eyes.
But we can, or I have. I've sensed them. I've seen lights blink on and off and in the corner of my eye.
And that's, some people can see that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel them.
You are very fortunate if you can. And again, the way you are describing that you're seeing it in the corner of your eyes,
yeah.
whereby your real attention is not, your real eye's attention is not directed to them.
Well, I think there's something also about cones and rods, and something Grandpa said years ago is that one of those see other dimensions. I think the whatever's on the outside see other dimensions, and the cones, I think, just see this dimension, you know. So there's something about our visual capability that we haven't completely explored.
That is correct.
But yes. What I'm really interested in also is, like, your history as a mainstream scientist and coming to something that most people would say is paranormal. I don't know. There's probably no real classification for it.
Yes.
But give us your history and how you got from there to here.
Well, I certainly, let me say this, had a person approached me maybe 6-7 years ago that he had photographed emanations from spirit beings, I would have said, you must be nuts.
Right.
And so I've come a long ways. I mean, I've definitely come from the very skeptic side that everything that I could not explain or with physical terms, I would simply discard.
You would discard it. But you were a scientist, right?
Right. And as a scientist, I almost felt the obligation to do that.
To discard new information.
Pardon me?
You, as a scientist, you felt to discard information that would not fit into your worldview and paradigm? Is that what you're saying?
That's how I used to be. That is correct. And that's how I think many scientists are.
But that's the very opposite of how science is really should be.
Science is perceived as being at the forefront of discovery, yes. But it has the unwritten law that this discovery can only be within the framework of what we can explain.
Uh-huh.
And there are things that simply do not fall into that framework, that fall outside the box.
Uh-huh.
This is a jump that a scientist has to make in a way to proceed. He has to be, and I came to the conclusion that in order to proceed with my own development, in a way, I needed to allow occurrences, even if I cannot explain them.
So you decided not to discount something that fell outside the box, you're saying?
I decided not to discount something outright when it fell outside the box.
Well, if something falls outside...
And it opened up a whole new perspective.
But if something's outside the box of what can be explained, then it must be obvious that what we think we know is not the whole truth.
That is absolutely correct.
And so scientists then say, you know, space and time are like this, and then someone like Einstein comes along and says, no, it's like this, and, you know, there's a bigger picture that's being painted, and that must be happening all the time in science, if it's truly an act of discovery.
I think it has happened frequently in science when a new realization came about.
Yeah.
Einstein, for example, certainly was not very popular in the beginning.
Right.
With his new theories. And it took quite a while to accept them.
Well,
and we know in history that this has been the case over and over again.
Over and over again. I mean, the guy who discovered circulation was laughed at, you know, that the heart
right.
was pumped. That, the guy who studied, who found about continental drift was laughed at. And
right.
I just read the first airplane, the Wright brothers... were totally
yes.
discounted, and there were articles
right.
coming out saying
right.
heavier-than-air machines were impossible.
Yes, and it is actually my view that people who do not allow to entertain an idea that falls outside the box really are shortening their own experience.
Right.
They are cutting themselves off of truly exciting aspects of life.
About what's they've limited their own possibilities. I mean, even me with orbs, like, okay, I started to see them in other people's pictures at the ramp, and then I started to take them myself, and then they started, there was one exercise I did at this particular school, the ramp school,
uh-huh.
where I did discover them, and we would project a symbol or imagine a symbol that the orbs would have, and then these pictures would be taken, and there was an orb that I projected with that symbol. It happened to be an infinity sign, but there was that symbol inside the orb as if it was responding to an intention that I had, and then my own history with orbs and going out and looking for them and actually feeling like there's almost a relationship I have with these beings, whatever they are. I still find that hard to accept, even though a part of me is doing it. Do you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about?
I think the latest findings that we are, in fact, creating our own reality. And what you are describing is just that, that the orbs are, in fact, responding to what you are creating.
But, there's two sides to the creating the reality thing. It's like, I am creating my reality, but this is something I never intended to create. I mean, I was
yes.
introduced to it, and then said, okay, let's have some fun. So, and then there's the other part that says, no, this is impossible. This is just. So, I mean, are we? If we're creating our reality, then how do we ever get anything new into that reality? Is my question to you.
I think the orbs, in a way, are showing us that there is a lot more to reality than we think, than we have thought before. I believe if there is a message, then it is that message that they are just simply telling us, hey, there is more.
There's more to the reality. So then, in a sense, we create the reality in an open-ended way. Right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
We say, okay, I'm intending this reality, but I'm also open to whatever else is beyond what I can conceive in this moment.
That I think is a good way of expressing it, yes. I really resonate with that.
So what kind of scientist were you before you got into the paranormal or
what
whatever?
I am trained as an experimental physicist doing surface physics research. And for many years I have done surface physics research in conjunction with the University of California in Los Angeles and then Stanford University. And usually, or mostly, on contract to NASA.
You're saying surface physics?
Surface physics, yes. That's the physics, the interaction of gases and environments on solid surfaces.
On solid surfaces.
Yes.
One thing I always was curious about gases is the inert gases, the noble gases, seem to mark a sort of a ending point to our dimension because of their electron configuration. There seems to be something almost mystical about these inert gases. Is that true?
Well, for me at the time, the mystical part was that they were particles and that they were inert, so we could use them in essence to clean solid surfaces before the reaction with, for example, oxygen would take place.
Uh-huh.
So we would bombard the surface with argon, for example, which is a noble gas.
Yeah.
And so it would keep the surface clean, and it would, in fact, remove everything that's on it that is not the particular matter of the surface itself.
But don't you think... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, so there is not too much relationship to the orbs research in that, but that's what I was doing.
No, but I always thought it's odd that there's an sort of limit or ending to an electron configuration, if that's what electrons are actually doing, and no one really knows, because some people say the electrons are really gas clouds. But it seems, according to the periodic table, that the noble gases mark a sort of division point within our structured universe or three-dimensional realm that seems to be a sort of period, ending point, but there seems more to be going on with them, you know?
That could very well be. Although I do not think that this has, I mean, at least it is not, wouldn't it be clear to me that this has any particular relation to the explanation of the Oort phenomenon?
No, nothing to the explanation of the Oort phenomenon. But then how did you go from that kind of practical physics? What was the first thing that opened you up to something new in your reality?
I would, I think I'd have to say that I have always been interested in spiritual phenomena for a good part of my life. And when I ran across these orb pictures, that did startle my interest.
How did you connect this spiritual phenomena to the hardcore physics that doesn't include anything about spirit? How was that bridge for you? I mean, did they fit?
You mean even before the orbs?
Yeah, I mean, you were involved with, even before the orbs, you were involved with or interested in spiritual phenomena, but yet you were very trained in classical physics. Was there a point where the two fit, or were they just totally disconnected?
I would have to admit that I had always a, what Professor Tiller calls a Vargo factor, that was greater than zero, and so I was always somewhat open to the fact that there is a spiritual reality that is an adjunct to our physical reality that we can see and that we can experiment with. And this spiritual reality would just simply be one where we would not be subject to the limitations of space and time as we are in the physical.
Well, it does seem...
This construct has always intrigued me, and I do believe that there is now mounting evidence that there is something to this construct.
Well, if there is a spiritual reality, and I think there is, and maybe the orbs are part of it, there must be some laws. Maybe they're not the laws of physics, or maybe it's a higher physics, but there seems that there must be laws that govern that reality as well, don't you think?
I would think so, yes. That is the case, and if you, well, this again goes quite a way outside of the area of orbs.
That's okay. We can talk about it. We don't have to just talk about orbs, because I'm interested in all the stuff that you're studying.
Yes, it's been one of my fascinations has been an extrapolation of the dualism that we know exists in normal physics, the wave-particle dualism.
Yeah.
And I have hypothesized that there is a whole reality that is, in a way, a dualism counterpart to the physical reality that we're all living in.
Explain a little bit more about that. That's very interesting.
And if you run this thought experiment all the way through, what you are actually doing is you are adding what amounts to an additional dimension to the four-dimensional space-time that we normally have, and that would be all that would be needed to add this additional dimension.
So in this dimension, some things are both wave and particle at the same time?
In that dimension, what would be the entity energy itself would already be in that dimension. And it would have a counterpart that would be that could be construed as thought consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And so it gets into this whole aspect, what is consciousness? And does it decay or does it not decay? And where is it? Where does it stay connected to a person? Is there something that is superordinated as consciousness? All of these things are very interesting to look at in this metaphor.
Well, could actually we be photographing that dimension with these orbs? Could these orbs be aspects of that consciousness?
It's conceivable that the orbs, and that would be my way of looking at them at this point in time, that the orbs are in fact representatives from that reality.
Because they do seem to exist within a dimension of themselves.
They appear to be existing in a dimension that is outside of ours, yet they appear to have an energetic component to them.
Uh-huh.
And that is the component with which they make themselves known in our cameras. Because
and they seem to have an
aspect
of consciousness as well.
Yes.
And some people say they're actually the projections of their own consciousness somehow.
There is one of the pictures that I'm showing in the book, in the Orb Project book,
yes,
is a picture where a person projected his own thought consciousness outside of his head and then said, I'm going to do this, and then said, now I've done this, take a picture. And that picture is shown in the book.
Uh-huh.
And it shows something that looks very much like an orb,
uh-huh,
but very different from the normal orbs.
Very
bright next to his head.
Uh-huh. So maybe this way of theory that you have is actually the reason, you know, this book came to you, to write this and to tune into this. Maybe you are actually describing an interactive reality that seems to be connected to us all the time.
I believe that it is connected to us all the time. I believe that these orbs are, in fact, all around us all the time. That this reality that we are talking about,
uh-huh,
is not away from us, but it is with us. It is totally there is no space and time separation between us and that reality.
Right, I get the sense of that too, that they're actually probably all around us now. If I was to photograph just my room I'm sitting in, they'd be perhaps, I was going to say listening to this conversation, but
I'm sure they are.
I mean, if they're listening, then they're conscious, and then they're. But I think they are all around us all the time, and you know, I think there's a related ghost phenomenon that is connected to this, because I did photograph a cemetery. There was stuff around there that was a little odd. And
now, if you look at this phenomenon all the way through, you would have to say that it is our physical reality that has enormous limitations.
Yeah.
And that other reality has many, many fewer limitations, and therefore probably has many, many more variations of species and all of that within that reality.
Well, I don't know. I think we have some unlimited possibilities here that they might not have, too.
That's possible, especially in our production, quote-unquote, of thought and consciousness, with which we, in fact, then penetrate into that other reality.
But I just want to say, I'm talking to Klaus Heinemann, who's a co-author of The Orb Project, which is published by Beyond Words Publishing and Atria, a division of Simon & Schuster. You can go to theorbproject.com to look at the website, or beyondword.com and look for the book. This event on Saturday I'm hosting, Klaus won't be there, but his co-author, Michal Ledwith, will be there, and it's going to be starting at 3:30 at the Synagogue of the Arts, which is 49 White Street, South of Canal in New York City. If you have any questions about that, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. But let's talk a little bit more, and then we'll wrap it up. The idea that these things can be photographed means that they have substance, right? They're etheric, but describe what you think is happening as, because they're usually taken with a flash. When the flash hits whatever these things are, it's reflected back in. Talk about that.
I would, at this point, hypothesize that they take the energy from the flash and literally radiate it back in a very directed fashion, almost like a coherent laser beam to the camera to be recorded in a picture.
They do that with conscious intention, huh?
They do that with conscious intention.
Now, why do you
think
that?
They do not radiate, and the experiments have actually shown that. They do not radiate in isotropically, meaning in all directions. They would have far too little energy to do that.
Yeah,
they select a very, very directed direction.
Is that why they appear flat, when in essence they must be actually balls instead of discs?
I would think that they are balls.
You do think they're balls?
Yes, I do. I think they are plasma-like balls.
But
they are not physical plasmas. They are energy plasmas of some sort.
Now, why do they appear flat, then?
I'm sorry?
Why do most of them appear flat? Is that just the perspective of the photograph?
I think that's a perspective. I mean, if you photograph a regular football, it doesn't appear three-dimensional either.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
The other unusual phenomena is in rain, they seem to be these orbs, and I photograph them a lot, going upward. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Not seen, you know, this the varieties may be unlimited, but I personally have not seen any particular preferred direction in which the orbs go, if they move with fast speed.
You've seen them move, though, right? You've seen the pictures where one may be kind of as if it's moving as a photography that
almost like a comet.
Yeah, you've seen that, right?
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that. In fact, I have seen movies taken from where they're moving around.
You've seen movies of orbs?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
In an exciting film that was taken by some British people a couple of years ago, I believe, in Abajania in Brazil, at the home of João, the medium João, whom some people know as, in the common language, John of God.
Oh,
and,
right.
They have taken film sections, 5 minute long, I believe, where they several people saw them, and they moved all around, and they're beautiful pictures. So that may be one kind or one sort of orbs, not representing all the orbs that they are, but just one kind.
I see. Well, I like that you're still a scientist about it, and you know, you have hypotheses, and you're not coming out and you're not saying this is what it is. But
I'm certainly not shattered if something else comes out.
Right. I mean,
looking at the evidence.
Is there more that, I mean, it seems like this is just the beginning of the phenomenon, but is there more to be found out about this? I mean, what experiments can people do, or where is the research going, I guess, is the question I'm asking in this area.
Where is the research going? That is a good question. I think we have literally just scratched the surface of it.
Uh-huh.
And as more people see them and more consciousness is implanted in people about them, I think that will determine the directions. I would hope that at some point in time, maybe it could even be tied with some... let me not speculate at this point.
Okay. No, you can. I mean, it's okay. No one's going to hold you to it. I love speculation,
right,
because it creates a possibility, and maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Okay.
I think that the research will have to go in the direction of doing more with the consciousness part.
Yeah.
Really, talking to them, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Having an exchange of thought. I mean, it is already so that from the evidence that we have, that you literally talk to them and ask them, show up in my picture, and they do.
Yeah.
You don't voice that, but you think that.
And Nihal seems to be getting some amazing stuff with the fields and the torsion fields that are happening with what
he's doing. Yes. He's been getting amazing results. Many pictures.
Yeah.
And probably since he is taking most of his pictures in the outdoors and in the dark, he probably gets mostly different species of them.
What do you mean, mostly different than other people are getting?
It all depends. I have mostly seen orbs or photographed or seen orbs in my pictures who were at certain occasions around people, both in joyous occasions, in festive occasions, in spiritual occasions.
Yeah.
And Michal mostly, but not all, mostly has in his collection pictures that were taken outside and not necessarily connected with many people around.
Right, that's true. And that's all in the Orb Project book, or some of those...
That's all in the Orb Project book. All I'm saying is that I believe that the variety of orbs is huge.
Yeah.
And so as more and more people get experience with photographing them, they get them in different different situations.
Right. And they actually, I've seen them become plasma or mist. And that's another phenomenon as well,
yes,
right?
That maybe they change their size and their location so rapidly that they lose totally their shape in the image, and then they appear like these nebulous plasmas.
I think they could actually have a sort of group mind where they all dissolve together as if, you know, drops in an ocean form a pool of water, you know?
I have taken one, and this is not described in the book yet.
Uh-huh.
I have made a series of experiments where I used three cameras and three different cameras to establish whether or not there's any camera effect and so on.
Uh-huh.
Took hundreds of pictures with all three of them at the same time and got an interesting result. And the result is that in each camera, in 33% of the cases of the pictures, there was an orb.
In each camera, was it the same orb?
Each camera registered, not the same orb, but registered an orb in one-third of the occasions.
So what did that prove to you?
In total, there was one orb in each picture.
Uh-huh.
But they evenly distributed themselves over the three cameras.
So what conclusion do you draw from that?
The conclusion of that is that if you really think about it, that is almost an enormous act of telling us something.
An enormous act of what?
It's an enormous, in a way, act of telling us something that they did not appear in one camera more than in another, and that chose to be just so distributed that 3 times 33% is 100%. So in each act of exposures of three cameras, there was one orb.
So
it almost sounds like there was a group mind that decided, let's show them what we can do.
So if they're saying we're not going to appear to any one camera more than any other, they're talking, or maybe you're a conduit to the general public saying that, you know, everyone has a chance to get it, not they're going to appear to some people more than others.
Right, and just simply saying, hey, we are going to show you that there is a little thought that we can project, that you know, we give you a little a puzzle to solve,
right.
Something to think about.
Right.
These percentages that came out were interesting.
That's great. Well, you are probably the leading edge person, scientist, that is researching this phenomenon.
I hope there will be more.
Well, there will, but it needs people who are creative thinkers, who can think outside the box in order to actually devise experiments that will give us more about them, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, they say that you only get the answer to the greatest question you can ask. I mean, you only get the answer from the level of question you're asking. You're asking bigger questions. You're getting more information then.
That is correct. And I would hope that we all, as time progresses, more and more people go in that direction, and more people will be open, and this thing will unfold.
I'd love to do a show with you sometime about perception and creativity. We didn't really get into that because I know you've been studying that as well, and something I've been.
It is an interesting topic indeed, and yes, there's a lot to be.
Well,
I'm
actually writing about that, the artist's role in creating new perceptions, and I think the scientist as well, the true scientist that's willing to think outside the box, gives us a little bigger piece of what reality is by articulating a perception that people may discount or not aware of. So it's those anomalies, the things that are then given expression to, then become incorporated into a greater vision of what's possible and what's here.
Yes.
And I think that's exactly what the orbs are doing. They are giving us a picture of a greater reality that we are actually living in.
Right. Now, in my book section, I am mentioning the apparitions of Medjugorje in Yugoslavia in the mid-80s.
Uh-huh.
And this is an interesting phenomenon, and people might want to read that and kind of draw their own conclusions.
Well, what's the connection between the apparitions
of
Mary?
That in before the discovery of the orbs, and
uh-huh.
maybe... You know, if we do want to connect crop circles with this, then before the discovery of crop circles
uh-huh.
as a big phenomenon and orbs,
yeah.
there was really only the spirit beings, if they were there, and I believe they were, only had the opportunity or the power to be seen by a few people who were really visionaries.
Ah.
And these visionaries in Medjugorje in Yugoslavia were children between ages 10 and 20.
Right.
And they appear to these children, and there is no doubt there were medical / physical experiment done to document that these children did not have hallucinations or anything like that.
I know.
They actually saw apparitions. But the point is,
yeah.
it was only about 40 children, and everybody else did not see it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a method whereby they, with a capital T, can make themselves visible in digital cameras all over the world. All you need to have is a digital camera.
That is a great observation. I'm glad you brought that, because what it seems to be saying is that somehow we are evolving our perceptions and our consciousness, and there's a sort of, my hypothesis is that there's a thinning of the doorways, a bleed through between the dimensions that seems to be making itself manifest now.
Yes.
And that's really exciting. I knew there was an apparition of Mary in the Bronx in about 1945, and I went up there and interviewed Joe Vitello, who's about now 60-something, and he has a shrine to Mary. But I talked to him about his apparitions, and it was absolutely true. He saw something.
Right. But it's very hard, especially for the skeptic, to do anything with it, because they just simply say they are hallucinating.
Well,
and there's no proof.
It's great to say that people are hallucinating, but the whole question is, it like UFOs? I mean, I've seen UFOs. I was not hallucinating.
I know that.
Things out there.
Right, you see that. But when you are talking about it, you will often find simply disbelief among some of the listeners, because they cannot see it.
They can't see it, and it's like, you know, John Mack, who was very much into this phenomenon, UFO abductions, and he was a Harvard psychiatrist, told the story of how either him or someone said, even if it's true, I don't believe it, you know?
Yeah, right. Right.
So
now you can say, just, you know, just get yourself a camera and photograph it and make up your mind.
Make up your mind and your own story about what they are, but they exist. I mean, I do urge everyone who's listening to take a digital camera. Now that you've been initiated with this conversation, go out there and I find if I take pictures of the sky, they'll show up.
Yes, they definitely will. That is the easiest way of because the background is dark, and so any contrast whatsoever will much easier, with much less energy, be imprinted on your
right.
Camera.
Sky at night, just point your digital camera up toward the sky and see what you come up with, and I guarantee 1 out of 10 pictures will have something that can't be explained.
Right.
It's a very exciting work you're doing, Klaus. Thank you.
And I appreciate your letting me, asking me these questions.
Well, this is what I've been, I mean, the show is called New Realities because I think this is the most exciting things that are happening on the planet, is investigating new perceptions and new phenomena in order to expand our minds.
Right. The interesting thing is, although your show has a very good title, the reality that we're looking at is, in fact, not new. It's just our perception of it.
You don't think that they could be new, that the fact that there's this bleeding through is something that we as a evolutionary race could be moving towards something new? Do you think
it's new. There's no doubt about it. But in that reality that we are talking about, I think they have always existed, because there is no time. This is the concept, new and old, is a third dimensional concept. Is a concept that is that belongs to our physical, emotional, mental reality, but not to the spiritual part.
Right,
that
I see what you're saying.
That extension doesn't have time and space limitations.
I mean, as I'm talking to you, I'm actually getting more and more excited about what orbs are, because it's like you're pointing out to me that we are being integrated into a dimensional phenomena and seeing for ourselves really a new heaven and a new earth here. It's miraculous that it took a simple digital camera to expose a hidden reality, like you said, that was there all along.
Yeah.
Isn't it truly miraculous in a
it
sense?
It is. It is miraculous.
And
it is
and so
also food for thought.
What's that?
It is also food for thought.
Yeah.
That's a metaphorical way of saying it is something that should make us think, that should make us reflect on many things. And I think it should make us reflect on the situation that we as a species are in at this point in time.
Well, go a little bit deeper into that. What, like environmental? What do you mean exactly?
Well, I mean we are still in this ancient mode where we are resolving conflicts by killing each other.
Right.
Where we are talking about spiritual evolution, but really not applying it.
Right.
That where we are far away from where we should be.
Right.
And if there is a message in all of this, and of course this message may be personal for every individual, but for me it is to take another look at this whole situation. How are we really treating our neighbors? How are we really treating our fellow human beings?
Right.
And what is it that we need to learn if we as a species are to survive?
I totally agree. And it also brings up maybe a chance to redefine ourselves of who we are as humans.
Yes.
and open up a possibility of what consciousness is.
What consciousness is and what we have to do with consciousness.
Yeah.
Because we can be... we can be vehicles to produce consciousness.
Vehicles to produce consciousness.
Yes.
Well, explain
explain that. It seems to me that if it really boils down to what is it that we are all about as human beings, as species, it, in my mind, is that we are to produce consciousness, to become conscious, to add to this field, to this morphic field of consciousness that is increasing with every person, with every event of consciousness. Because consciousness is something that does not decay, like every physical energy or any physical matter does. It decays. Consciousness does not decay. So, in essence, with us humans, this little speck in the universe, we have the capability of adding to the consciousness that is there, ever so little, but maybe that is part of the big plan.
Well, as you're saying that, I get the sense that we as humans are vehicles of consciousness. We are here as emanations of consciousness, and our whole purpose for existence, if consciousness never decays, is to start to direct that consciousness towards a higher, more collective, more loving and compassionate end.
Yes.
Not to isolate what is my consciousness from your, but to join together, and it's only in that it seems like that evolution is possible.
I think so. In fact, consciousness is not something that remains tied to the person that produced it.
Uh-huh.
I think as the moment it is made, if you can make consciousness or produce it, in that moment, it gets released and it's separated from the person from whom it came. So this is not something that is just like that you can have a copyright on.
Well, couldn't the orbs be an aspect of ourselves that we're now ready to join up with in our next phase of this evolution of consciousness? So here we are as humanity evolving, and here's this other part, as if, you know, two parts of, let's say, a machine, and now we're both ready, where the thing is being put together, and something synergistically will result from that. That just came to
that's an interesting thought, and that's a thought that I resonate with, but I think we know far too little to really one can talk about it. When I think this is a something that I resonate with, yes.
I mean, it just came to me. It's like, oh, if we're really connected to each other, and we must be connected to everything that is conscious, then we're most likely connected to this phenomena that are another aspect of our evolution or another aspect of ourselves.
Right, right. It gives us a larger picture of the oneness that we are connected with.
Yeah, that is the most exciting thing about this orb phenomenon. It gives us a bigger picture of who we are as consciousness and of what the world is about and what truly an understanding of what dimensional reality is about.
Yes.
We have a picture of other dimensions. That I think, is phenomenal and miraculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
I think...
Yes.
As a metaphor, when we, for the first time, some 40 years ago, saw a picture of our planet Earth from outer space,
yeah,
that was an event of enlightenment.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we saw that everything that connects us, that we knew, was all confined to that tiny little thing there in space, photographed from the moon. Rusty Schweikert had this realization. And I think the orb phenomenon, photographs of orbs, could have a similar impact on people.
To show how limited what we thought was reality, huh?
Right, right. Indicating to us there is a lot more. Just take us seriously. Understand that there is more to reality than you've always believed.
Well, I am thinking that, and I think the Orb Project, the first book that's major book that's out on the subject, is going to start a phenomenon, a fad, where, and that's what I'm hoping to start, everyone going out and starting to compare their orb shots. I mean,
right.
And I think, you know, as it becomes more mainstream, people will open up to, well, what else is possible?
Yeah.
Who are we really?
Who are we really? What are we really supposed to do, and what are we doing? And why aren't we changing?
So you see it as a vehicle for change.
I see it as a vehicle to become, to reflect on who we are and what we're doing and where we are going, and an indication that we do need to seriously consider and redirect our where we're going.
Well, thank you, Klaus, for this interview.
Thank you for your questions.
Well, let's talk again. I mean, I do this show every week, and I just wanted to really get the orb thing handled because the conference is coming on. I really want people to really come down to this conference in New York and really bring your camera, bring your digital camera.
Yes.
There'll be people there conducting an orb hunt, and everyone can be a participant. Although I have found that the more expensive cameras have some kind of filter that seems to block out the orb ones.
I have used all levels of cameras, and I have actually not seen differences.
You haven't? Okay, that's good.
Yes.
So
don't worry. People should not worry about the type of camera. Just go with it. I think if the orbs want to be shown in people's cameras, in people's images, they will see them.
Great. Okay, I'm talking with Klaus Heinemann, who's the co-author of The Orb Project, published by Beyond Words and Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster. You can look at theorbproject.com. His co-author is Michal Ledwith. Michal will be in New York on November 10th, this Saturday, at 49 White Street in New York City, along with a host of other people talking about orbs and the whole understanding of dimensions, interdimensionality. It's going to be a really interesting way out conference. And if you have any questions, you can even call the number 212-473-6388 or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and you've been listening to New Realities with me and Klaus Heinemann. Klaus, any final words there?
Well, just thank you, and the realization is very important to me that this is a hopeful event, a very hopeful event.
Yes.
That this seeing the orbs, seeing a glimpse of the fact that there is another reality, I think is very helpful.
Thank you, Klaus. That's great. Good.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay, I'm going to go out with this song called Masters of Life.
Okay, bye-bye.